This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hi, this is Joe Lepari for the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. We're reading from the latest issue of Science News. The articles we'll be reading today include a new method of making diamonds doesn't require extreme pressure. Another article is entitled Red Cells Grow in Mice Brains and Help Sniff Out Cookies. And a third article is A Vaccine for Bees Has an Unexpected Effect. And we'll read other articles as time permits. So our first article is entitled A New Method of Making Diamonds Doesn't Require Extreme Pressure. Lab-grown diamonds formed without a squeeze in a liquid of gallium, iron, nickel, and silicon. This article was written by Emily Conover and is dated April 24, 2024. The article begins, Diamonds in nature famously form under immense pressure in Earth's mantle, but a new laboratory technique allows diamonds to skip the squeeze. The most common method for producing synthetic diamonds, known as high pressure and high temperature growth, or HPHT, requires about 5 gigapascals of pressure, similar to that in the upper mantle where diamonds form naturally. With this technique, carbon dissolved in liquid metal forms diamonds at temperatures around 1400 degrees Celsius. But diamonds can be grown in an atmospheric pressure in a liquid or of gallium, iron, nickel, and silicon exposed to a gas of carbon-rich methane, as well as hydrogen, scientists report April 24th in Nature. The technique also required lower temperatures than HPHT, 1025 degrees Celsius. The addition of silicon in particular seems to kick off the mantle stages of growth, allowing a tiny bit of diamond to nucleate, says physical chemist Rodney Ruoff. From there, the rest of the crystals can grow. The demand for diamonds isn't just about gemstones. Scientists can use diamonds for everything from sensing magnetic fields to searching for new subatomic particles. The new method could make generating such materials easier. Quote, the synthesis need not depend on expensive or complicated equipment, unquote, says Ruoff of the Institute for Basic Science Center for Multidimensional Carbon Materials in Ulsan, South Korea. Another technique to produce diamonds in the lab, called chemical vapor deposition, or CVD, takes place at low pressure with a vapor of carbon-rich gas being deposited on its surface. Unlike CVT and HPHT, the new technique doesn't make use of a diamond's seed, quote-unquote, an initial bit of diamond to kick off the growth. CVD and HPHT are widely used in the jewelry industry. It remains to be seen whether a new technique will make diamonds destined for bling. This article is written by Emily Conover, who has a PhD in physics from the University of Chicago. She is a physics writer for Science News and a two-time winner of the DC Science Writers Association News Brief Award. Our second article is entitled Rat Cells Grew in Mice Brains and Help Sniff Out Cookies. Chimeric mice are helping to reveal the biology of flexible brain development. This article is written by Laura Sanders and is dated April 25th, 2024. It begins, what does it feel like to be a rat? We will never know, but some very unusual mice may now have an inkling. In a series of new experiments, bits of rat brain grew inside the brains of mice. Donor stem cells from rats formed elaborate and functional neural structures in mice's brains, despite being from a completely different species, researchers report in two papers published April 25th in Cell. The findings are quote-unquote remarkable, says Afsana Galliard, a neuroscientist at INSERM and the University of Poitiers in France. Quote, the ability to generate specific neuronal cells that can successfully integrate into the brain may provide a solution for treating a variety of brain diseases associated with neuronal loss. These chimeric mice are helping to reveal just how flexible brain development can be. While no one is suggesting that human brains could be grown in another animal, the results may help clarify biological details important to interspecies organ transplants, the researchers say. The success of these rat-mouse hybrids depend on timing. The rat and mouse cells had to grow into brains together from a very young stage. Stem cells from rats that had the potential to mature into several different cell types were injected into mouse embryos. From these rat cells developed alongside mice cells in the growing brain, though researchers couldn't control exactly where the rat cells ended up. In one set of experiments, researchers first cleared the way for these rat cells to develop in the young mouse brains. Stem cell biologist Jun Wu and colleagues used a form of the generic tool CRISPR to inactivate a mouse gene that instructs their brain cells to build the forebrain, a large region involved in learning, remembering, and sensing the world. This left the mice without forebrains, normally a lethal problem. But rat stem cells could fill the void in these mice. Quote, the chimeras can live a normal life up to 2 years that we analyzed, unquote, says Mo of the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. These mice seemed to behave normally, and their forebrains were the right size and shape. Galliard points out, however, that more detailed studies are needed to say how similar these rat cells are to the mouse cells they replace. In other experiments, mice put rat cells to good use by sniffing out buried cookies. In this work, neuroscientist Kristen Baldwin of Columbia University and her colleagues focused on brain areas that handle smells. The team put donor rat stem cells into the embryos of mice engineered to have damaged smell systems. To their surprise, in some mice, these rat cells knit themselves into neural circuits that allowed the mice to sniff out and dig up buried Oreo cookie. Some clusters of nerve cells endings that help animals sense odors were built solely from rat cells in these mice, the researchers found. And in some animals, random chance had made it so half the brain was made strictly of mouse cells, while the other half had rat cells. In these cases, quote, the rat cells were really driving the brain to respond, unquote, Baldwin says. Quote, that was pretty cool that half of its brain was smelling and half of it wasn't, unquote. In both studies, a close look at the rat donor cells showed that they adopted many of the traits of surrounding mouse cells. Rat cell size, growth timing, and cellular targets look less like rat cells and more like mouse cells, the researchers found. That suggests the environment these cells grow up in can strongly influence the cell regardless of its specific species identity. The results tug at deep philosophical questions about what it might be like to have part of another species' brain, Baldwin says. She points to an essay by philosopher Thomas Nagel, quote, what is it like to be a bat, unquote. Without a bat's brain, Nagel argues, it's impossible to ever really know. Quote, we gave the mouse basically a version of that. What's it like to be a rat, unquote, Baldwin says. So it's got some of a rat's brain, and it's using it to do its most fundamental task, which is to find food, unquote. The results go beyond the philosophical. By figuring out the details of interspecies cell transfers, researchers hope to learn more about how brains evolve and develop. Wu is keen to study the brains of wild rodents, including the African pygmy mouse, and has a tiny brain commensurate with a body that's about 6 to 8 centimeters long. Wu wonders if stem cells from this minuscule mouse would grow larger forebrains if grown inside the head of a regular house mouse. The new results could lead to insights on brain cells flexibility, Baldwin says. Quote, we were delighted to find out that there were unknown aspects of brain plasticity, unquote. And those insights, quote, lead us to think this kind of approach would be very informative for future attempts to fix human brains, unquote. The article's author, Laura Sanders, is the neuroscience writer at Science News. She holds a PhD in molecular biology from the University of Southern California. So our third article is entitled, A Vaccine for Bees Has an Unexpected Effect. Honeybees immunized against bacteria also fought off a virus. This article was written by Tina Hessman-Say and is dated April 24, 2024. The first vaccine designed for insects may make honeybees healthier overall. Honeybee hives vaccinated against a bacterial disease had much lower levels of unrelated viral disease than did unvaccinated hives, veterinarian Nigel Swift of Dallin Animal Health reported April 3 at the World Vaccine Congress. Researchers at Dallin, based in Athens, Georgia, designed the bee vaccine to protect against African fowl brood, a fatal disease caused by a spore-forming bacterium called Panibacillus larvae. Adult bees don't get sick, but can spread spores in the hive, where the disease infects and kills larvae. Spores can remain visible for more than 50 years, so beekeepers with infected colonies must destroy hives by irradiating or burning them to keep the disease in check. A vaccine may save bee lives and beekeepers' livelihoods. Fowl brood disease is just one of the many problems plaguing bees, Swift said. Quote, pesticides, parasites, climate change, nutritional stress, these all make bees more susceptible to infectious diseases, unquote. From April 2022 to April 2023, U.S. beekeepers lost an estimated 48% of their colonies, according to the Bee Informed Partnership, a nonprofit research organization. Dallin's vaccine against fowl brood disease doesn't rely on tiny syringes. Instead, bees are inoculated through a sugar paste that researchers spike with heat-killed pea larvae. Worker bees eat the candy and incorporate it into their royal jelly, which they feed to the queen. Inside the queen's gut, bits of the bacteria attach to a protein, which in turn transports the vaccine fragments to the ovaries, where they can be deposited in eggs. Larvae that hatch from the eggs should be protected from the disease. Testing the vaccine wasn't easy. One larvae-producing site in Florida was hit by a hurricane. Quote, another was taken out by bears, unquote, Swift said. But the team persisted in lab tests. The company infected larvae from both vaccinated and placebo-treated hives with P. larvae. About twice as many placebo larvae died as vaccinated larvae, the researchers reported in 2022. Based on that evidence, the U.S. Department of Agriculture gave conditional approval for the bee vaccine, Dallin announced in 2023. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency authorized use of the vaccine later that year. Beekeepers who had been using the vaccine till Dallin, the vaccinated colonies, seemed to have all-around improvements in health that couldn't be explained just by reducing the incidence of fowl brood disease. The company decided to look at a variety of diseases, honey production, and other measures of bee health, along with the efficacy of the vaccine in a real-world setting. An apiary called Vidalia Apicultural Services and Bee Company in Lyons, Georgia, let Dallin use 400 hives for the study, which lasted for one season. Half of the hives got a new vaccinated queen, and half got a new unvaccinated one. In one sense, the test was a bust. No cases of fowl brood disease were found in any of the hives. Quote, this apiary was just too good, unquote, at controlling the disease, Swift said. So the company couldn't determine how effective the vaccine was against its intended target. Yet the researchers found a surprising result. Vaccinated hives were protected from a viral disease spread by Varroa mites. Both vaccinated and unvaccinated hives started the study with the same number of mites and a baseline level of virus, as measured by a PCR test. Virus levels continued to rise in the unvaccinated hives, but declined in the vaccinated ones. At the end of the study, vaccinated hives had accumulated 83% less virus than the unvaccinated hives did, Swift said. The number of mites per hive remained the same. Quote, it's an important finding for sure if it's repeatable, unquote, says biochemist Andrea Gwynn of the biopharmaceutical company GSK, based in Middlesex, England. Gwynn, who works on vaccines for people, is a hobbyist beekeeper. She's particularly interested in whether queen bees can pass on defenses against American fowl brood and perhaps other infections for more than one egg-laying season, and whether a queen's drone sons and daughter queens could pass on the protection to a second generation. The results are still preliminary, and the researchers aren't sure exactly why immunizing bees against bacteria might also protect against viruses, Swift said. It may be because bees' immune systems aren't as specific as those of humans and other mammals. Anything that revs up bees' immune responses may help them take on multiple intruders. Quote, we're just trying to think it through. What is really happening, unquote, Swift says. Quote, it's humbling. You get these results sometimes that weren't what you were expecting. This could be somebody's PhD now to go and tackle this particular topic, unquote. The author of the article, Tina Hesman-Say, is the senior staff writer at Science News and reports on molecular biology. She has a PhD in molecular genetics from Washington University in St. Louis and a master's degree in science journalism from Boston University. Since we have time, we'll read another article entitled Newfound, quote-unquote, altar magnets shatter the magnetic status quo. The materials have attracted attention for their versatile potential. This article was written by Emily Conover and is dated April 25th, 2024. It begins, for the first time in nearly a century, physicists have identified a brand new type of magnetic material. Crack open a physics textbook, and you may read that scientists classify magnetic materials into two main types, ferromagnets and antiferromagnets. Ferromagnets are what most people think of when magnets come to mind. These materials possess a magnetic field that lets them hold up photos on a refrigerator or cause a magnetic compass to point north. Antiferromagnetic magnets have no external magnetic fields, but have other magnetic quirks. Now that classic pair has become a trio, physicists have reported a new class of magnetic materials called altar magnets, which could lead to new technologies such as faster, more efficient computer hard drives. Even though the idea behind altar magnets is extremely simple, says theoretical physicist Igor Mazin of George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. Quote, somehow nobody thought about this possibility, unquote, until recently. The fact that a third magnetic category could have remained unnoticed this long, quote, it's very surprising to me, unquote. That's because the study of magnetic materials is an ancient science. Ferromagnets have been known for thousands of years. Lodestone, a magnetized form of the mineral magnetite, fascinated the ancient Greeks. The Chinese forged the magnetized material into the first compasses in the 4th century BC. Antiferromagnets were discovered in the 1930s. Then, a few years ago, theoretical predictions suggested altar magnets could exist. And when scientists began searching for them, researchers quickly discovered that the magnetic materials were real and plentiful. Altar magnets are in their own class. On a microscopic level, materials get their magnetism from their atoms. The atoms have spin, a quantum mechanical property bestowed by the atom's electrons. That spin makes each atom act like a minuscule magnet. The spins can point in different directions, normally called spin up and spin down. Any material which spins with spins arranged in an orderly way, in the absence of any externally imposed magnetic field, is considered a magnetic material by physicists. In ferromagnets, the atoms spin align so that their magnetic fields combine to create a magnetic field that surrounds the material. Antiferromagnets do the opposite. The atoms spin, point in alternating directions, and their magnetic fields cancel out, producing no net field. In ultramagnets, the atoms spins alternate, but with an added twist. Not only are the spins of neighboring atoms opposite, but the atoms are also rotated. If you think of antiferromagnets like a checkerboard, with alternating black and white squares standing in for spin up and spin down, then ultramagnets are like an M.C. Escher drawing with tessellating shapes, birds, horses, or another of Escher's motifs that don't just add alternating color, but are also rotated with respect to one another. If you take an ultramagnet, flip its spins around, and rotate the material by 90 degrees, for example, it will look identical to its original state. That's a special type of symmetry different from other magnetic materials, and this symmetry puts ultramagnets in their own class. Jairo Sinova of Johannes Gutenberg University, Mainz, and Kellogg's colleagues argued in Physical Review 10 in September 2022, one of a smattering of theoretical papers since 2019 that helped put ultramagnets on the map. Experiments have now begun confirming the ultramagnet's identities of certain materials. Ultramagnets get real. Scientists predicted that the electrons within ultramagnetic materials would have some unusual characteristics. To confirm the ultramagnetic nature of a given material, scientists need to map out that electron behavior. Particularly important is plotting out how the energy of an electron in the material relates to its momentum. In ferromagnets, electrons with a given energy on that map split up. The momentum depends on the spin. Spin up electrons will have different momentum than spin down electrons of the same energy. Here's where the ultramagnet's weird dual nature comes into play. Scientists predicted that the material's electrons would be split according to spin, but only for the electrons moving in certain directions. That means, in some orientations, the material will act like a ferromagnet, and in others, like an antiferromagnet. To confirm this effect, scientists used a technique called angle-resolved photoemission spectroscopy, which measures the electrons emitted when a material is hit with light. With this method, researchers observe spin splitting in the material manganese telluride. The material has been studied since the 1960s and was previously thought to be well understood as an antiferromagnet. But the results match predicted ultramagnetic behavior, researchers reported in the February 15 Nature. Well, that's all we have time for today. This has been Joe Lipari for the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Have a great day.